Good morning, everyone. We're going to bring the meeting to order. It's good to see everyone again on this wonderful Friday, cold Friday. Again, it seems like we were just here. We don't quite have a quorum yet, but we do have a lot of information to get through, and we're going to adjourn at 11:30 because Ways and Means has this meeting room scheduled. And so we'll get started with Mr. Allen, if you'd like to identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Allen. I've recently been appointed Director of Chemical and Mental Health Purchasing at the Department of Human Services. As such, I'll be responsible for coordinating managed care policy as it relates to chemical and mental health services, and I'll be intimately involved with the implementation of many aspects of the mental health initiative as it rolls forward. So I encourage you to use me as a contact person in the future if you have any questions. This morning, I'd like to start with, I guess, what if I was to hear them, I'd probably describe as a couple of platitudes. The first is that nothing succeeds like success. It's a foundation of the mental health field, steeped in the recovery type concept, that one always builds on their strengths. And as we've moved forward and brought the mental health initiative forward, and as we move on into implementation, we're well served to remember that. And we keep some of the strengths going that brought us to this point. We tried to keep throughout this process the consumers' needs and preferences foremost. We joined and worked to maintain an ongoing dialogue with all the stakeholders in the mental health system, both to work through problems and to develop and maintain a common vision that we were working towards. We've all been doggedly persistent in working through this. Everyone listed on the agenda today has been at the table week in and week out for the last 4 years. It's really been an impressive process in that regard. And then finally, I want to say that we've benefited from leadership of many, many people throughout the process. The governor stepped in and charged the department with taking a leadership role back in 2004 when the MHAG group was stumbling a little bit. He then included the mental health initiative in his budget 2 years in a row. We benefited from a lot of leadership here in the legislature, keeping mental health on the headlines and in front of committees throughout the last couple of years. And really throughout the advocacy, county, all of those sectors, I've seen an enormous amount of leadership and people stepping up and doing what needed to be done. And we need to continue that as we move forward through the implementation. The other platitude that I wanted to offer is one that I picked up just last week, but I thought it was really appropriate for this as we enter the implementation phase, and that is that nothing succeeds as planned. You can count on life throwing you a few curveballs, but eventually you will. That doesn't mean that you won't be able to get to where you wanted to go and put together what you wanted in the first part. I wanted to just share with you quickly a couple of slides that outline some of the MHAG guiding principles. These have been guiding us since 2003 at this point. I began this initiative working here on this fourth bullet point around developing ways to create a sustainable and affordable financial framework with an emphasis on rational incentives. And this is my entry into this whole project, but as you can see and as you look through some of these other guiding principles, the mental health initiative as it came forward really ended up touching on all of these items. But on to the implementation update that you asked for. We started work following the 2006 legislative session. The legislator bent some of its own rules and made a one-time appropriation of health care access funds that allowed us to get started on the activities that you see on this slide. They were a critical access rate increase, and in July 107, that rate increase provided a 23.7% increase for the services of psychiatrists and advanced practice RNs, and then through certain mental health services that were offered by mental health centers and essential community providers. We also began with crisis service grants. We had $1 million that were appropriated for 2 years. and we used that to support the fledgling infrastructure for crisis services that was started in the metro area. And that was, again, a partnership venture that was undertaken by counties, health plans in the department, along with a little prodding from the Attorney General's office at that time. We began, and this is very exciting to me, an outcomes measurement system. This is built on the work of the NHAG Quality and Performance Work Group. It measures clinical outcomes related to changes in functioning and symptoms in clients. We have piloted the children's measures in over 40 counties. The two instruments that we're using there are the Strengths and Difficulties Questionnaire and the Child and Adolescent Service Intensity Index. On the adult side, we're a little bit behind, but have got the pilot up and going in five counties, and we're using the Patient Health Questionnaire, version 9, and the Behavior and Symptom Identification Scale. And these are tools that allow in a very validated way to measure client progress. This is very exciting. I think this is one of the keys to us in the future being able to demonstrate what we're accomplishing with mental health treatment in the state. Are people getting better, and are their lives getting better because of it? We will be following up the pilots here with statewide implementation. I might also add that mental health has been working with DHS Healthcare Operations on some federal grants and future funding opportunities for healthcare systems. And one of the first projects out of the gate that we're working with them on is a web-based and secure portal to collect clinical outcome information. And we've been at the table from the start so that we know that the requirements that are necessary to transmit mental health data are built right into that system as it gets implemented. One of the other important items that we started following the 2006 legislature was the creation of a bed tracking system. We eventually ended up making a grant with the Minnesota Hospital Association back in February 2007, and this system has been operational and able to track daily availability of psychiatric hospital bed capacity across the state since last October. Behavioral health and emergency departments within hospitals across the state have access to this data and can use it to guide patients to where the available capacity is. Next steps on this process is going to be moving this to other kinds of high acuity and low capacity services. We're looking at using this service to track the ability of detox services, crisis services and crisis bed services, and some of the more intensive end of the residential services scale as our next step. Work after the 2007 session, Madam Chair. I warned you it might be like that a little bit this morning. First, we had a really large job in maintaining stakeholder involvement. We've held, since the close of last session, over 60 meetings with external stakeholders. This has taken many forms. One of the things that we did that we've done in the past and found very useful is we first started out holding focus groups that were centered around different interest groups within our stakeholder community. We held focus groups with, for instance, consumers and advocates, labor unions, mental health service providers, counties, and health plans. And this is to get an understanding of the unique perspective that each of these groups brings, and that information is very helpful as we try to chart a course and structure the dialogue as we move forward so that it's constructive, so that we pull together the kind of consensus we need to when we need to in order to act on the implementation. It was a very helpful first step. We have convened three ongoing advisory groups that we've been working with. One, for lack of a better term, we call the broad advisory group. It's broad in both membership and in the scope of people that are there. We have generally at those meetings at least 40 people who attend, and the announcements go out to more than 100 people who have shown up and attended as the agenda has indicated their interest. It's really a large group. This group this past year has spent most of its time talking about case management and care management, And so those discussions, I think, have paralleled a lot of what's gone on with the Healthcare Access Commission around those topics and also the Healthcare Transformation Task Force. This group's advice also is included in a legislative report that we released this last week. I believe there are copies of it in your folder. It's got a blue cover. They're gone up here now. It's also available on the department's website. Another group that we put together was one to focus just on children's issues. And because of a draft federal rule that was released this summer, this group spent an awful lot of time working on issues related to children's residential treatment. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later when I talk about some of the findings in the report. Finally, we put together a group of consumers and advocacy stakeholders that was to work on providing us advice on how to structure and what to include in the RFP that would be used to solicit proposals for the preferred integrated networks. These are the networks where we will be bringing persons with disabling mental health conditions into a managed care delivery environment. And we want to make sure that we are capturing the interests, needs, and issues that the consumers have as they move forward. That group has been an enormous amount of fun to work with. They've got a lot of energy and are, as you can imagine, deeply concerned and take their work very seriously. But at the same time, they're a lot of fun. I'm meeting with them this afternoon. I'm looking forward to reconnecting with them on that. Let's see. Part of what came out of the 2000 session was also a critical access rate increase, part two. And in this increase, there was a 23.7 increase for the CTSS providers that were not included in that first round of increase, as well as the similar increase for medication education by ARMS providers and the cost of supervision of behavioral aids by all the CTSS providers. Also, there was an addition from the legislature of a 2% COLA for all long-term care providers in October of last year and then again in July of this year. And I didn't put it on the slide, but there was also a 2.3% rate increase for individual and family skills training performed by all CTSS providers. And that was effective on January 1st of 2008 as well. One of the big items that was passed last year was the implementation of the model benefit set. We were able to, over the summer, bring adult mental health rehabilitation services and adult crisis services under the responsibility of the PMAT contracts over the summer. With calendar year 2008, this last month, adult mental health rehabilitation services, assertive community treatment, intensive residential treatment and adult crisis are all now covered benefits under the broad PMAP, GAMC, and Minnesota Care contracts. We are currently working with stakeholders on case management and children's residential treatment issues, and those are online to begin being included in the PMAP contracts in calendar year 2009. Also put in place during the session last year were provisions to include peer specialist services and an intensive outpatient treatment benefit to cover dialectical behavioral therapy. The work is done to set up those and implement those. We're in the process of hiring positions at the Adult Mental Health Division to guide those efforts we'll be, I think, hearing or interviewing applicants on the peer specialist shortly. So that'll be coming online as scheduled as well.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allen, you just mentioned something about dialectical, and I didn't catch the second word on that.
Behavioral therapy.
Okay.
I'm not a clinician, Madam Chair, but my understanding is that that particular therapy is used extensively or is an evidence-based practice, I should say, for persons with borderline personality disorder. I mentioned earlier that we released a legislative report. The charge that we had in that was to comment on the role of counties and clarify the case management roles, functions, decision-making authority of health plans and counties. to clarify the county retention of the responsibility of the delivery of social services. As I mentioned earlier, this is also an area that the Healthcare Access Commission and Healthcare Transformation Task Force have been putting a lot of work into. And finally, as you're all aware, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services also did some work on the case management issue over this last year. And they released a draft regulation that had some far-reaching implications for this state. Some of the key findings, I'm not going to have time, I think, and give the other testifiers any time to comment to review the whole report with you today. But I do want to refer you to it and review some of the key findings, or at least some of the ones that resonated with me. If you are interested in looking through the report yourself, I'd recommend, if you're short on time, that you look at the executive summary. And then if you go to about page 40, you can skip a lot of the background and process and get into some of the meat of the recommendations and some of the issues that we've dealt with and read from there on out to the end. And that'll be something that I think you could cover in a half hour or so. Some of the selected key findings that we had. First off, there are many examples of wonderful work being done in our state's mental health system, but it's a complicated system that makes doing wonderful work harder than it should be. Also, and this is, I think, just a confirmation of a lot of what came out of the earlier NHEG process, is that consumers, families, and their advocates want to see mental health treated on par with any other physical illness and brought into the mainstream of health care. And that to the extent that mental health services are covered as health care services, the health care coverage should be primary, and there's no need for counties and the public system to duplicate that coverage. This policy was incorporated into state law last year or the year before by the legislature with some provisions of the Mental Health Act that reflect that policy. We had an awful lot of discussion and information that showed how much the primary care system is at the center of our mental health system, whether we had intended it to be that way or not. Huge amounts of psychiatric drugs are prescribed to the primary care system. Many, many people with depression are treated through the primary care system and many other illnesses as well. Maybe some of you were aware of a report that was put forward by the Minnesota Council of Health Plans that talked about primary care and its management of mental health. We need to do what we can to better support primary care and the delivery of mental health services. We simply do not have enough specialists, psychiatrists, and other mental health professionals to take on this role. We have to find ways to support primary care in delivering and being an active partner in the mental health system. Primary care is also key to the integration of physical and mental health care, and it's key to developing a workable and lasting set of strategies for early identification and intervention, especially with children. And finally, as we've seen in a lot of the work that's been done, both in the legislature and in our work groups, primary care is a promising location for coordinating or placing the onus for the coordination of care. For people with mental health and physical health needs. One of the other findings that we did, we looked at a number of models that are currently being employed creatively around the state and other places for delivering case management and care coordination services. And we found an awful lot that was working well, an awful lot that was working well for different folks and not working well for other people. We found instances where there were people who were getting a lot of case management and care coordination, and other people who, because of their situation within the system or where they were accessing the system, were not getting a lot. And there were models out there that could be used to serve a much broader range of people. We came away from this with an understanding that we should be looking at more ways of making care coordination and case management services available to people at a level and when they need it. We looked at short-term models, we looked at physician-directed models, we looked at our traditional county-based system, we looked at research that's being done on how to best assess and assign people to different levels and gradations of care coordination and case management based on the complexity of their needs. There's a lot of technology out there, and we should be working to take advantage of it. Certainly one of the things to come away from this is that one size does not fit all. We should be tailoring the service more individually than we currently are. We also spent an awful lot of time talking about the impact of the new federal Medicaid case management rule. This finding, I think, probably is the most positive thing you can say about the new targeted case management rule, that the core of what has always been there is still there. This is still a can be used as a way to fund the important activities of determining what a person needs to be healthy and to make a satisfying life for themselves, facilitating their access to the health and services that they need, of monitoring their progress and adjusting that plan as the person's needs shift or as more appropriate resources become available. The very core of what targeted case management is still available. However, the feds have done an awful lot to change the scope of it. They've put limits on our ability to use it for any kind of direct service, or they've narrowed the scope of what they see as direct, or expanded the scope of what they saw as direct service and narrowed the scope of what they saw as case management, I should say. They've also put in some policies regarding the policy for comprehensive assessment, which I generally think is a good thing, but they've extended that to a rationale that there should only be one case manager, and I think that that's one that's going to be problematic for us. Some people have needs that are so complex, it's difficult to imagine how any one person would have the expertise to understand and be able to facilitate their access to the systems that they need. But we are working through this with our partners and trying to figure this out. CMS has taken in an enormous amount of input from across the nation. They've kind of retreated and are trying to come up with answers to these questions. And then I'm heartened to tell you that yesterday Congress began to take action. The Minnesota delegation in Congress had submitted a moratorium on this rule, and my understanding is that this was amended into a bill and passed the Senate yesterday. And so on to the House, and so we will see what happens. That moratorium would delay implementation of the targeted case management rule until April of 2009. Moving on. One of the things, and this again came out of that children's issues work group, is that clear lines of authority and responsibility for the children's residential mental health services would be best served by making the health plan responsible for all the costs of the child's residential care for the enrollees. This is a kind of a complicated subject, and I'll try and cover it quickly. Currently, children's residential mental health treatment, or what commonly is called Rule 5, is covered in two ways. Well, it's covered in one way, really. It's a very county-centered process at the moment. Counties negotiate rates with the facilities, and they pay the per diem cost of the child when they stay there. Counties then turn to the department and get federal reimbursement from Medicaid for the treatment portion of those costs, because the treatment portion of those costs is a benefit under our medical assistance program. And then they turn to the Title IV-E program for a few of the kids and get federal reimbursement there for their expenditures related to room and board, because that's considered foster care. As we move forward on implementation of the model benefit set, we wanted to make health plans responsible for their enrollees for the whole continuum of treatment services. And this meant moving the Medicaid benefit into the health plan. This makes a lot of sense because it avoids opportunities for cost shifting. If a child needed residential treatment in the current situation, a health plan could allow that child to get sicker, and the child would have to go to the county, access the service on a fee-for-service basis. It wouldn't be coming out of the health plan's capitation. And we want to keep that pressure on for them to have an early intervention and a preventative mission when they're dealing with those children. So it makes sense to make the health plan responsible for the cost of that service. However, when we move just the Medicaid benefit into the capitation and into the health plan, we created a situation where we would have to have both the health plan and the county agreeing on admission, length of stay, discharge, follow-up care, those sorts of things. And this is a potential source of confusion and argument that probably isn't going to benefit the child. So one of the recommendations that came out of this work group was that we find some way to put all of the eggs in one basket, one side or the other, with the preference being on the health plan side. And we worked on strategies to do that. I also should let the committee know, for your information, that in addition to the targeted case management rule, last summer the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services put out a rule governing services under the rehab option. We pay for a lot of mental health care under the rehab option, and among those are adult mental health rehabilitation services and children's CTSS, or therapeutic services and support services. This is a lot of the very hands-on, supportive, community-based work that goes on. It's covered under the rehab option because it's one of the few places in Medicaid where it's possible to cover the services of a paraprofessional working under the direction of a professional, as opposed to most of the rest of the Medicaid program where you're limited to reimbursing the services only of a licensed professional. So it's a cost-effective way of bringing that intensive level of service to people with mental illness and many other difficulties in our state. We reimburse children's residential mental health services under the rehab option in this state. And the most disturbing thing that was in that rule is that they said, CMS had said in the rule that states would be prohibited from providing rehabilitative services in a setting that was integrated in a foster care setting. And this seems to be a description of our current means of reimbursing the service, and so we're quite concerned about that. Congress also became concerned about that and implemented a delay of the promulgation of this rule as well, and that's delayed out until this summer, and so we don't really know what's going to happen with that. It's an item that is kind of hanging out there in the weeds. Our children's issues group reviewed a lot of the other options that are available to us and didn't find any very satisfying options there as well. Nothing that led us to immediately want to leave the rehab option until we knew what else was available. We looked at the what's commonly known as the Psych Under 21 benefit, and then also some of the new community home and community-based service options that were made available under the Deficit Reduction Act. Neither of those were entirely satisfying options, and so we decided that our best course was to make do with the rehab option while we can and find a way to facilitate the smooth access of children in that service until that time. Finally, in terms of clarifying the role of health plans in counties, health plans obviously are held to what we hold them to in their contracts with the department. They're responsible for delivering the health care benefits that are a part of the state's medical program and the terms of the contract that we put in place. And so that's why we're working very hard with consumers and advocates as we put together the Preferred Integrated Networks RFP and contract. And also learning from the work that was done on the SNP basic care contracts that were put in place this past year and the process that informed how generally they should be structured in order to better serve persons with disabilities. So those are going forward in that way. Counties' role is also not changing very much, and that's because they still have such a large role in serving people with mental health needs who do not have insurance. We see counties retaining system-wide responsibility for planning and development. They're a local government, and they have a role and a need to look at what's available in their communities for the people that live there. And we have a process for them through the local mental health advisory councils to learn about unmet needs and get that input in that planning. Also, counties will continue to have the responsibility they have for providing mental health services to those people who don't have adequate insurance coverage, and for coordinating those responsibilities with other entities like health plans and other service systems at the county government. Finally, just a note that we really need both of these sectors to work together along with the state in order to ensure that we have a well-functioning mental health system.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Garland.
Thank you, Senator. Are we taking questions as we both hurry to be late and I didn't catch the procedure, or should we wait till Mr. Allen is done or everybody's done? Or
Representative Garland, I think I'm going to wait till the other testifiers get done, because some of the questions that we will have are going to impact the county's testimony anyway.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen.
Okay, I'll move along then. Madam Chair, more on the implementation update that you'd asked for. We had a large amount almost in the base in the out biennium, I guess is the phrase to use, of nearly $20 million a year was appropriated in infrastructure development grants. Just to update you on progress there. On the adult mental health side, crisis services awards to 11 adult mental health initiatives were announced this week. This is enough to bring, these grants went out to regional county consortiums, and they provide statewide coverage in those regional areas. They may not provide coverage of crisis services in every corner of every region, but we've got most of the state covered with that. The appropriations for evidence-based practices are supporting training for illness recovery or illness management recovery, which is an evidence-based practice. And then also we're training 8 hospitals in the provision of integrated dual diagnosis treatment models. Coming soon will be an RFP supporting the application of an alternative to assertive community treatment that will be a little bit more manageable for rural communities. The RFP for culturally specific services to minority populations is scheduled to be released in mid-March. The focus here will be on services to Hispanic and African-American populations. I would add parenthetically that we've been supporting grants to Indian tribes and Indian-serving organizations and some of our new immigrant populations through some federal funds that we have at our disposal for some time. We received some funds for specialty treatment grants for special populations. On the adult side, we're using those to support jail diversion and mental health court models at the at this junction. We're also working on plans for doing some elderly mental health education and some early identification projects with that. And then we got a really nice appropriation for housing with supports. We use those to provide supportive services to this last round of housing projects that went through the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency's Housing Trust Fund, and there will be another joint RFP release this spring. We're also working with some of the adult mental health initiatives on tribes on some expanded housing options through that mechanism as well. On the children's side, the RFP for the crisis services is out, and grants, actually the proposals have been received, and grants will be awarded in early March for the next couple of years. The respite care grants to counties and tribes will be awarded in April. And evidence-based practices grants will be training providers in the use of the Minnesota, we used to call this the Hawaii database, but we're appropriating it a little bit more. And the contracts for the trainers for that are in place. We'll be issuing the RFP to get the provider's costs covered in doing the training and becoming familiar with the use of the database shortly. culturally specific RFP has been released on the children's side. Awards are expected in April. That's got a very broad set of uses or populations that it can be applied to. And it is culturally specific providers who are the respondents to that RFP. The RFP for specialty services will be used to address early childhood grants and the school-based services RFP that was grants that were appropriated, and the RFP was released back in December, and the awards for those are anticipated in April with 3-year grants. Another major part of the mental health initiative was the preferred integrated network. And as I outlined earlier, we've been doing an awful lot of work with stakeholder groups on designing and configuring these. We plan on releasing the RFP for these next month, and then an RFP for the evaluation in April after presenting a evaluation plan to the legislature next month. County and health plan joint responses then would be due back in June. We'd be doing project selection in August, and then working with consumers and stakeholders on communicating with consumers in the areas that are going to be launching these projects on what their options were, what their options will be, and what kinds of services they can expect under those preferred integrated networks. This will be there to inform their choices as to whether or not to join those networks. And then contract negotiations would be concluded by November in order to be put in place for the coming calendar year in 2009. Finally, evaluation. This is also, for me, a very exciting part of this process. I think this is the first time that we've ever had any significant amount of financing to work with on evaluation in the mental health system. We are going to be working through the external quality review process that is put in place in federal law to evaluate managed care systems. The nice thing about this is that we need something to compare the preferred integrated networks to, and this is going to give us an opportunity to also evaluate then care that's delivered under our fee-for-service system, care that's delivered to people with private coverage even perhaps, care that's delivered through Medicare in the SNP basic care options. We'll be able to do an awful lot, I think, with this, and we'll know in a much better way how we compare and how what we're doing in these projects compares to what we already have and what we're putting in place in other places. As I mentioned, we'll be presenting an evaluation plan to the legislature next month. I can say that, first off, we're making a big effort to link that evaluation plan to the MHAG policy objectives for the Mental Health Initiative as a whole, so we will be grouping that evaluation in terms of how are we doing with improving access, improving the quality, and improving the accountability of this system. So that is my presentation. That's where we're at with the implementation of the Mental Health Initiative. I was joking with Dr. Edwell earlier that this was a little bit like, to me, how I spent my summer vacation kind of report, in which he corrected me and said, no, this is how you didn't spend your summer vacation.
Exactly.
But I appreciate that and look forward to your questions later.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Representative Haas, we're going to wait to have some questions. He just came in just to let you know that, let some of these other folks get through, and then we will invite Mr. Allen back up because I'm sure we have some questions. Ms. Lerner. And if you folks could identify yourself for the official tape, we'd appreciate it.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kate Lerner. I am the director of MACSA, which is the statewide association representing county social service directors from all of Minnesota's 87 counties. Appreciate the opportunity to testify and share a bit about the county perspective as far as how implementation of the Mental Health Initiative has been progressing. I've asked if Stan Groff would join me today. He's with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and also a former social service director from Steele County and has good perspective to share, and I asked if he might join me to assist in answering any questions you might have following testimony today. When the Mental Health Initiative was being considered last session, counties fully supported the principles of reform on which the initiative was based, the issue of parity, making sure that mental illness was treated just as any other illness, the issue of integration and making sure that medical health care is effectively coordinated and integrated with behavioral health care and also social services, and then lastly, the expansion of the benefit set, which of course is a critical component. And counties are really committed to ensuring that continued focus remains on these important principles as we move forward in the implementation phases. As many of you know, however, counties were also vocal last session about some of our reluctance to wholeheartedly support endorsement of this proposal, primarily because of the lack of clarity surrounding roles and responsibilities of both counties and the health plans and some other stakeholders as well. At that time, we received assurances from the department that we would have the opportunity to bring clarity to some of these roles and responsibilities before full implementation of the initiative. And as Mr. Allen has reported from the department, language was included in the legislation that passed that mandated the drafting of this report that you have today that was intended to clarify those very roles and responsibilities. And that brought reassurances to counties, and so we moved ahead in supporting passage of the initiative with cautious optimism. And since legislation passed last session, DHS clearly has done a lot of work and has convened a number of different work groups. Two of those that Mr. Allen already referenced, the Broad Advisory Group and the Children's Issues Group, counties played a very active role, and they both were aimed at helping to provide input to the development of the report that the department has put together, specifically around bringing clarity to roles and responsibilities of counties' health plans. And based on the input from those two groups, the department drafted its report, and counties certainly think that this report provides a strong foundation from which to begin addressing the myriad of complex issues that need to be addressed for effective implementation of this initiative. But we do remain very concerned that a number of questions remain unresolved. Questions about the roles and responsibilities and the authority of counties and health plans in delivering, coordinating, and paying for services to clients within this new mental health delivery system. And if I can, I'd like to just give a couple of examples of some of those questions so you have a sense of where our concerns are. The first one, actually, Mr. Allen provided a great segue. The department has done a really good job of recognizing the challenges associated with movement of the children's residential treatment benefit to the health plans and the complexity that results because of the fact that health plans are responsible for covering the treatment portion of those costs under this transfer. And currently, counties retain the authority to pay for room and board and perhaps other benefits that fall, or other services that fall outside of that benefit. And the report even articulates the need to, for the state, counties, providers, and health plans to collaboratively develop joint guidelines for screening, admissions, discharge, and payments for these residential treatment facilities. For all of those children that are enrolled in PMAP. But I have to point out that none of those details have yet been fleshed out. And it is really critical from the county's perspective that we do flesh those details out before full implementation and before these benefits do transfer or are scheduled to transfer in January of 2009. The second example I'd like to share relates to how important it is to involve courts and other stakeholders in really ironing out the logistics of implementation. Specifically, when children are court-ordered into a residential treatment facility, it's not uncommon for courts to mandate that they attend a specific facility. And in that instance, given the way that our current mental health delivery system has operated, it is not common practice for the courts to confirm or verify that specific facility might be within the network of covered providers for that specific health plan. So in this instance, if that court were to, for example, mandate that a child be placed in a treatment facility not covered within the network of the health plan to which they are a covered member, counties would then be on the hook for paying for the full cost of that residential treatment. And in that instance, perhaps more concerning is, as part of this initiative, you are well aware that funding to cover those costs will have, by that point, been transferred from the counties to the health plans. And so the dollars that counties would have used in that instance to cover the full cost of that treatment will no longer be accessible to counties. To reiterate, it's critical that these kinds of questions and many others be resolved so that mental health services are consistently delivered from one county to the next, from one health plan to the next. And I'm concerned because the report from the department does specifically state that DHS is of the opinion that remaining concerns can be addressed in the implementation process. Allowing these issues to be addressed one by one and once implementation has already begun is very concerning, both from, first and foremost, from the perspective of the consumer and the client. We have real concerns that will, of course, result in a very confusing delivery system for clients, particularly those, for example, who may belong to one health plan in a particular county, decide to enroll in a different health plan, and now have to deal with a different set of protocol and processes for these two case management and children's residential treatment in particular. The same goes for if a client moves from one county to the next, even while remaining within the same health plan. The procedures and protocols may vary from one county to the next, unless we really take the time to flesh out some of these details. So, for that reason, counties request that if these kinds of questions and coordination challenges are not sufficiently addressed by January of 2009, that implementation of the benefit transfer and also the funding that is supposed to transfer from counties to the health plan be delayed. So before concluding, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the department did provide counties and other stakeholders with the opportunity to comment on the initial draft of their report, and MACSA did submit these very concerns to the department, and they were very receptive to them and did make some changes that to their report that are reflected in the final copy that you have, and we're appreciative of that. But I do think there are still a myriad of unresolved questions that need to be answered and addressed, and we really are asking the department to take a leadership role in convening the critical stakeholders, counties and health plans, but others like the courts, to ensure that really we have the opportunity to negotiate through a lot of these details before these benefits transfer in 2009. So thank you very much for the chance to testify, and I'd certainly welcome any questions if you'd like now or if you'd like to wait.
Thank you, Ms. Lerner. We will take any questions that members may have for you now, if members have any. Representative Bryling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lerner, do you feel better or worse or about the same from when we ended the session based on the process to date?
I don't know that I could sum it up quite that simply, Madam Chair. It's a good question. I think that there has been a tremendous amount of progress in terms of the implementation. I think that we're on the right track, but I think that without resolution to some of these yet-to-be-answered questions, we're headed down a pretty concerning path, concerning primarily for consumers, but certainly for those who are administering or playing an administrative role within this delivery system as well. So it's with a mixed bag of emotions. You know, again, we're very optimistic about some of the key components of these reforms, and we think that the input from the variety of stakeholders has really helped us to head down the right path in terms of incorporating some of those key components that I referenced earlier, parity, integration, expansion of benefits, and so on. But I do have concerns, as I've articulated.
Representative Brown.
Madam Chair, Ms. Lerner, that to me then kind of sounds like about the same. But I, you know, my concern always has been, what about the uninsured people and the fact that the counties do have to pay for them? And how does that translate, like, for instance, if people are at RTCs and they've spent their 60 days, but the county doesn't have any community service for them to go to and they end up staying there, just because of lack of capacity, does the county still pay for that? And, you know, what about people who are committed? Does the county still pay for them? I mean, I'm just wondering, if you're transferring the money to the health plans, are you going to end up with enough money to pay for who you have left? I just don't quite get that.
Ms. Lerner?
Madam Chair and Representative Bryling, it's a very good question. I think there certainly are concerns among the counties about how exactly the financing, in light of the transfer of funding from counties to the health plan, will work out. In fairness, we have been assured by the department that they do have a process in place to really assure that the funding that's being transferred from counties to the health plans really will only be in the amount or the value of services that transfer from counties to the health plans, and that there will be a quarterly settle-up process to ensure that counties really are only losing those dollars that will be covered, that will coordinate with the covered services provided by health plans. However, you know, the first example I gave you is one example of when counties would still be on the hook for paying for services that would have traditionally been paid for out of those dollars that I don't think has been taken into consideration in that funding transfer. And in addition, I think part of your point also raises some concerns about the challenge that counties have because of the fact that they still retain the authority as the local mental health authority, which means that they are responsible for every resident within that county to ensure that mental health needs are being met and that there's an effective delivery system in place to ensure that those needs are met. And the challenge comes into play when counties are not given commensurate authority to actually ensure that whatever outcomes they would like to see as a result of those planning processes are being carried out by the health plans, for example. So there isn't any authority that counties have to, for example, review contracts of the health plans and how they intend to provide services to those who are covered as PMAP or through the PIMS, and ensure that the specific priorities that have been developed through the county planning process as the local mental health authority are being carried out. And lastly, you know, specific to your question about whether or not counties have the funds remaining to cover under or uninsured individuals, there is concern within counties about whether or not the challenge associated with continuing to maintain the infrastructure needed to assure that you have resources for those who are un- or underinsured when a bulk of those services will now be transferred to the health plan. And it's clearly a challenge that's not easily worked around, and something that I think we need to continue to do some work on.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lerner, I just briefly going through the state report here and then talking about, and it talks about counties being here, but I don't see any stats or specifics or anything to say that there was a accumulation of individual cases or people that are in the mental health system that the counties have to deal with on a daily basis, monthly basis, yearly basis. And I don't know, maybe there's another report out there that shows specifics or things that you've taken into account or tabulated those things. And are there things that show that because I hear from my county that it's an ongoing, almost a daily or almost a monthly or yearly increase in the mental health area that counties are having to pick up the tab, and the costs are just, but I don't see anything that has been brought back to me here through this report. Maybe there's another report that you have or something else, but I'm not hearing anything that I see that shows that you're getting a grasp on this, that we understand that this is a huge area. And I see we're breaking it down for adults in 16 regions and children with six regions. I'm kind of confused on how this whole process came about and why aren't adults and children in the same category. A lot of questions that are really, and I guess you're understanding the same thing, a lot of questions that aren't being brought forward. Maybe we're just in the beginning stages of this whole thing, but if you can just elaborate on maybe bits and pieces of where, which maybe you've already talked about this, but maybe it hasn't been clear.
Ms. Lerner, whatever you can handle with that question, and then Mr. Allen is back there taking notes, and I'm sure when he gets back up to the mic, he can answer some of Representative Anderson's wonderful questions, because it does get to the core. Representative Anderson, I will say one of the things that we do before this change last year, we always kept children and adults separate, and some of that has to do with the funding mechanisms that come in for children that don't come in for adults. But Ms. Lerner.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, very good question. And if I'm understanding you, it really is, it gets at how do we know of the children and adults that we're currently serving within our mental health system, how do we know where they're going to end up? What system, in which system will they be served? Which health plan will likely serve? How many will move into CMAP? How many will remain fee-for-service? How many might be a part of a PIN, and so on? And what are the implications once we know that kind of information? I do know, I am going to have to rely on Mr. Allen from the department to talk more specifically about that. And I know that to the extent that data is available for us to understand that, certainly we have been trying to understand that. But I think part of it, I don't know that we have perfect data to be able to know exactly where everyone will end up. And I think that that makes us all a little bit nervous. But, you know, to the extent that we can plan for, given the data that we have, I think that certainly is what we're all trying to do. But with regard to those specific implications, I think I'll have to rely on Mr. Allen to respond.
Can you wait just a little bit? Oh, Representative Anderson?
Just one more question. I met with my county 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about, from a law enforcement, I had mentioned this yesterday in committee, about the fact of beds for people with mental illness, that they, as a county sheriff or a local police officer, has to take this individual who's acting out, and because of whatever he's done is considered a crime, although he now has been considered, after going to a hospital, he's now mentally has problems there. But there's no beds for these, and I'm wondering what the county experienced with that, because my county is saying, how, you know, the state's saying we have to help with this, but the counties are going, oh, we don't have any help because the state's not offering anything. So what's your experience with that kind of a situation with law enforcement?
Ms. Lerner.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, my name is Stan Groff with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Representative, you've asked a very, very good question. The state has gotten out of, except for one example, providing for state hospital beds for the mentally ill. There's still one at Anoka, but the rest of the system has been replaced by the 16-bed facilities around the state that have been brought online. And I can testify to my experience with respect to diverting people from the need for any kind of hospitalization with the proper community social supports, medical support, psychiatry, mental health treatment acts, and all the rest. Most of the people can be maintained in the community. But I will say to you that in your county and in many other counties, either those beds are not yet available, or it's unevenly distributed, or the systems are not in place to maintain individuals, especially adults, when you refer to police and sheriffs, courts, counties, attorneys, and the rest. In the community or in local facilities such as local hospitals. So that's uneven around the state, and I would affirm to you, sir, that what your county is telling you is true.
Representative O'Trumba, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I also have some concerns about the uninsured. One of my counties is the poorest county in the state, and so where does that money come from? Does it land on our property taxes, or our property taxes in that county are on the highest because we have no economic development, so to speak? And of course, there's a lot of mental health issues. Can you help me with that,
Ms. Lerner?
Madam Chair and Representative O'Trumba, I think that for many counties, yes, the answer is it will fall to property taxes. There are some competitive grants that have been referenced by the department that were part of this initiative that will allow counties to sort of beef up their crisis services. And as I understand, you know, that certainly can be used for those who are uninsured. But again, those aren't dollars that are being distributed evenly across the state or proportionately across the state. And I think for many small counties, the administration of having to apply for a competitive grant can be a challenge because of limited resources that they have. So whether or not those dollars are as accessible to a smaller county with limited resources as, say, a metro county, I think is certainly concerning. I also think that, you know, counties will be able to rely somewhat on some of the targeted case management dollars, but again, as Mr. Allen has talked about, we still remain very concerned about what the TCM regulations from CMS might imply about our ability to continue to draw down those funds, and certainly the scope of funds or the scope of services that will still qualify for those earnings has been narrowed, and so that funding source has been reduced as well.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We'll probably have more questions. We're going to move along because we do need to get out of here by 11:30. We are going to move to Ms. Abramson. Abramson. Yes. And if you could identify yourself for the tape, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Abramson. I'm the executive director of an organization called Mental Health Resources, which is a nonprofit agency in the metro area serving three of our counties, and serving adults with serious mental illness, often chemical dependency added, and often homelessness added to that. We foster hope and recovery for people affected by mental illness, and that's exactly what I'd like to talk with you about today. On behalf of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, we call it MACMAP, as a past president of that organization. MACMAP is a statewide association whose members provide a broad array of services for adults, children, and families in about 124 locations throughout the state. And I believe you have the map that shows all of the locations in which our members are providing services. Our members are key providers for public programs and private health plans. We are the safety net for thousands of clients every single day. MACMAP members have been supporters in the implementation of the mental health initiative. We've been part of the process, and we continue to support the initiative as it includes common benefits set across all government health programs, infrastructure investments, preferred integrated networks, all of the things that Mr. Allen presented earlier. We've responded to RFPs for school-linked services for children and for crisis services. We believe that the basic plan for the initiative is a good step in the right direction. It is complex, and it does involve changes for providers, counties, health plans, and our consumers. We have been involved with DHS advisory committees on which they have sought wide representation and input into the implementation of this initiative, as Mr. Allen stated. We have members in the Case Management and Care Coordination Advisory Group, Payment Model Group, implementing the Common Benefit Set, and the new Special Needs Basic Care Program for people with disabilities. Lots of people care about mental health, but they worry about the impact of these changes, and we all want to do everything possible to get it right. Some areas that are going to need special attention include payment reforms to sustain the evidence-based practices that our state is supporting and which require administrative changes in how claims are paid. Our new system, more focused on outcomes and quality, has duplicative administrative requirements. There are huge infrastructure challenges for providers that require investment in such things as a new electronic record, telehealth, travel to homes and between sites with gas at about $3 a gallon, and compliance with a long list of regulations. The new models of service require new types of relationships between providers, counties, and the health plans. DHS, as the purchaser, needs to be clear in its performance expectations of the health plans and counties so right services are delivered at the right time and in a timely manner. We need more attention to how this can be planned from the bottom up, how it's going to operate on the ground and in the streets, at the point of contact between consumers and providers. Many of our clients move back and forth between public and private coverage, between more and less intensive services. Our system has to be able to accommodate that and respond with intensity when it's needed and relax when it is not. Our system needs to be set up to avoid cost shifting. We hear concerns that some key services will be lost as we move into new arrangements, such as outreach services, in-home services that require travel to and from, community support programs, CSPs, and combinations of services that don't fit that office visit model. We're concerned, of course, about the downturned economy. We see more people who are uninsured, who are overwhelmed, and we see more uncompensated care. For children and adolescents, there are many issues related to shared responsibility between schools, health plans, and counties. There needs to be more attention to consumers' experiences when receiving services. How does it feel? Who decides? Where do you go? Who do you call? What about my old therapist or my case manager? We are off to a great start, and everyone is working hard to address the identified problems and improve our mental health system. Everything we do, everything you do, is about real people. Our husbands, our wives, our sons and daughters, our colleagues, and our friends. Treatment works, and we know how to deliver services. We need the systems to make it easier to do the right thing. And we thank all of you for your help. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Let's finish the filing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Abelson, I would ask you the same question. After we adjourned last year, now knowing what you do know, do you feel better, the same, or more concerned?
Ms. Abelson?
Thank you, Representative Dreiling and Madam Chair. I appreciate the question. I personally see the glass more than half full. I believe that we have so many people of goodwill working in this state to make the system more accessible and more user-friendly. I believe we're on the right track, and we can't stop where we are. We have a partially completed system, and we need to get to the next step. And I believe it's possible.
Does that answer the question?
No. I think we're about a little better than we have been in the past.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Abderholder. Good morning. If you can identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Sue Abderholden, and I'm the Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we're a statewide grassroots organization that seeks to improve the lives of children and adults with mental illness by providing education, support, and advocacy. On behalf of our members and the people we represent, I want to thank you, first and foremost, for the incredible work you did last session to invest in our mental health system. We are very hopeful that this first real investment will result in greater access to much-needed mental health treatment in the communities where people live. DHS has moved forward quickly but responsibly to distribute the infrastructure dollars. Since the session has ended, the department, in collaboration with the stakeholders, consumers, families, advocates, providers, counties, unions, health plans, and more, has worked hard to move the many pieces of the mental health initiative forward. My inbox is full of meeting notices, minutes, and draft reports. Some weeks I've felt that the NAMI staff and volunteers have spent more time at DHS than at our office. Many of the consumers and families around the table were not paid advocates, but are people who are active in their communities and thus were able to represent views beyond their personal situations. I think most people would say that the department has gone out of its way to share information and to seek input. DHS created a broad mental health initiative advisory work group, a preferred integrated network, RFP work group, children's issues work group, and conducted focus groups. At all the meetings, there has been ample time for learning, discussion, and feedback. What I think has been particularly helpful, especially for meaningful input from families and consumers who don't spend their lives attending these meetings, is that DHS actually brought speakers and information to the table to really help what I would call level the playing field. We had presentations about county-based purchasing, integrated care, and medical home models. We learned about SNPs and MINDO and other acronyms and how these programs work and how we can what can be learned from them. We even took scenarios of both children and adults with mental illness and discussed what services they would need, what type of case management or care coordination would be helpful. The PIN work group, Preferred Integrated Network work group in particular, which is pretty much all consumers, families, and advocates, and they are from around the state, not just the metro area, has really been a great opportunity to discuss concerns and to talk about safeguards and protections. The group developed a quite extensive list of questions related to, you know, the health plan and county partnership, communication, integration of treatment and supportive services, care coordination and case management, accountability and evaluation, the drug formulary, provider networks, emergency crisis and urgent services, and interaction with the commitment laws. The RFP, as you know, is not yet finalized, and once we have that product, that will really demonstrate the department's ability and our kind of responsiveness to our questions and issues. I can assure you that these groups have not been a rubber stamp for DHS, but rather have posed rather thoughtful questions and concerns to ensure that what I call the PIN experiment is set up as best as we can to protect people's rights, to increase access to services, and to create an opportunity for an improved delivery and coordination of services. The children's group, in particular, discussed all the possible alternatives and I believe came up with a recommendation that would not have been the department's decision had it been made internally. Because it was brought up earlier, I do just want to say that the issue in terms of children going into residential treatment is an extremely complex one. From the family's point of view, we think it's pretty, frankly, awful for any family who can't afford residential treatment to have to go through the TRIPS process, even if it is a voluntary placement agreement. Once it's a covered service, you don't have to go through the county TRIPS. It makes it like it's a regular service, like you would for any other part of your health plan. And I recognize there are problems with that. There are problems now with when a family has private insurance and the child is placed there and they run out of insurance and then have to go to the county. So some of these issues actually have been out there for a while and haven't been resolved. These are very, very complex issues. But again, from the family's perspective, we would have a little different view of how to make this easier for families to get services and not have to go through the whole TRIPS process. I think that overall, DHS has done a good job of bringing people together, fostering discussion, and listening to people's concerns and recommendations. The initiative should continue to move forward. I think we are working together, figuring out how to create a better system that will increase coordination and access and improve outcomes. Yes, there are some very, unresolved questions, but they really are the most difficult ones that remain, and they are ones that we have been, frankly, struggling with many years. In terms of the uninsured, I actually thought that you were going to have a solution this session. There are two recommendations out there, and I think that the uninsured issue goes beyond just people with mental illness, because it really, you need to have insurance in order to have early intervention and access. And by the time an uninsured person with a serious mental illness hits the county level, it is going to be really, more expensive services. And I can assure you that pretty much all the mental health advocates in the room will do what they can to ensure that all Minnesotans are insured by the year 2011. Lastly, I just want to say that the Mental Health Initiative was not the total answer to the many complex problems that face the mental health community. This was, in fact, a first step. And I know all the advocates in the room will join me in saying this is the first step, not the last step that should be taken.
Thank you. Are there any questions by members? Seeing none, thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Allen. But before we get to you, can we do a few housekeeping matters? Watching the clock, we actually have some minutes to approve and reapprove. Representative Rood, if you don't mind reconsidering and reapproving the minutes from February 23rd, 2007.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Yes. Thank you. Are there any objections to that or questions looking at the February 23rd minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? And Representative Lanning, if you wouldn't mind approving the minutes from March 9th and March 16th, if you would move those.
Okay.
Representative Lanning, it gets very agreeable this morning. If anyone has any questions or objections, please let them be known now. Otherwise, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those against, the minutes have been approved. Mr. Allen, there's a couple things. We may not get to all of your questions, so hopefully you are available next Friday, this same time. Members, we have, as you know, an aggressive deadline schedule, and we have a lot of things that we want to get you guys some information before we get out of session. The next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing some look at PsychBeds, and so this report will probably come back up again and the work that the DHS and the community has been doing. We're going to be doing Representative Ward's bill next week and looking at the Prairie St. John bed the following week.
while there's a report out there, DHS will hopefully be getting us information so that we can make, have all the knowledge that is supposed to be on the table before we make these decisions. However, because of our deadlines, we will not stop the process and deny members who are bringing bills to our committee in fair hearing. Representative Wardlow, did you want to say something?
Very quickly, Madam Chair, I just had a conversation yesterday with someone who brought up some examples. I caught the tail end of Representative Anderson's comments about how police officers have to drive long distances. And he said there was examples of where one man was in a wheelchair with mental illness, and he tried to get help. I can't remember if it was in the ER or a clinic, but he sat there for, I can't remember if he said 2 days, but at least 13 hours. And he soiled himself a couple times, and he never got help because he kept saying, wait. And then he gave another example of an elderly couple who the man wanted to bring his wife in. I think it was an ER because she was really struggling with her issues, and that might be the 13-hour one where they sat there forever, and finally he just went home and said, I don't need this abuse. And he's exciting examples of where some patients, there's no beds here, so they take them to like Fargo or Duluth to find a bed. And some of these people are incarcerated, not all of them. And he said that there'd be times if they have to go to a police officer might have to drive to Fargo to leave at 4:30 in the morning to pick up a patient to come to the cities to get a evaluation of some sort, maybe a. But anyway, and then he'd drive him back to the hospital at 12. He'd get home at 12 midnight, and that's a lot of overtime. That, you know, he said, we're spending lots of money doing that. And I just thought I'd just throw that out, and I was wondering if anybody else, maybe DHS is aware of things like that, or how prevalent is this? Does it happen a lot, or is it just occasional? Because I remember the other gentleman said it was, you know, maybe different pockets of the state where this might happen.
Representative Wardlow, you bring up a wonderful issue. It's actually why we're going to be spending two Fridays dealing with psych beds. Members, if you have not been approached by advocates or lobbyists on this issue, get ready because they're coming, and you will hear a lot of information on both sides, and hopefully we will have a lot of that information in front of the committee. There's a lot of stories out there, individual stories. There's some data that's coming through within the next couple of weeks, hopefully, that DHS will have. There's a lot of concern because there's a possibility of another facility coming, which always brings, as you guys know, competition and then concern about what will happen to the rest of the system and the rest of the providers, and most importantly, the individuals that we care a great deal about, the individuals that will be impacted, the patients and the families. And so we will be looking at that. Representative Wardlow, the other thing to know, we're hoping to get to some correction, and by correctional, jail, inmate, mental health theme topics by the end of the session. Just doing some hearings. Wanted to do, was looking at some bill opportunities, but I think just doing some hearings, carrying us over into 2009, because some of the things that will need to be addressed will have to be in collaboration with this committee and Representative Paymar's committee, and having some funding to address them. And so we're going to still try to get some more information as possible to you guys in the upcoming weeks, because it's not even months. We'll be out of here very shortly. And for those of you that have not met our new CLA, this is Kate Perchak. Perchak. There we go. Never, never, you know. And we have a new page, Emily, who's somewhere around here. And those of you that don't remember James is back. He's over there. So thank you guys for your service. Mr. Allen, Representative Greiling, would you like to start?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allen, when we have the Mental Health Act for adults and children, and those are still in statute, and they make the counties responsible. Is there anything with this new initiative that will need changing about that language, or are they still going to be the bottom line for all those things?
Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, I think that we made a commitment to the counties early on that when we had a clear sense of where this all was going, that we would come back with them and reevaluate how that goes. I think Ms. Aderholden made comments that if we achieve universal coverage and mental health benefits are part of that, that that's going to make a big difference. At the moment, though, that's certainly not the case. We have a lot of people who are uninsured and underinsured, and we have a lot of state grant money that is going to support services. All of that money that was appropriated last year builds on that base, and there's been a long history of counties using their block grant and local tax levy to provide services to that population as well. Really what we're doing here is that we're saying that when somebody is in a one of our state subsidized health care programs, be it medical assistance or Minnesota Care GNC, that and they need mental health benefits, that the mental health benefits are part of that coverage, and that should be billed to the health plan. Those are entitlements, and we've moved them off of county tax levies, and the risk will be borne by the state in the future. So I think that's a significant step in that regard. But we still need local planning partners. We still need eyes and ears on the ground at the local level. I think counties and state have got a real job to do to figure out how we work together and holding health plans accountable. We need, you know, you can't always tell everything from a great cubicle in St. Paul, and I'm looking forward to continuing those relationships. Responding to some of Ms. Lerner's comments about working through some of these details, in the 2 years prior to the last session, DHS had set up a work group that was just made up of DHS and county people, and it was a good forum to get down to some of those county issues that are uniquely county issues. This past year, we abandoned that. As we got towards the end of that process, we kept on finding ourselves wanting to bring in health plans into those discussions so that we could, you know, check with them about things that we were talking about and thinking about. And DHS, of course, is also always getting pressure from the consumer and advocates sectors who want to be part of every conversation that we have about their services. And so this past year we worked with large mixed groups. And it may be that we do need to go back and have some conversations just between the department and the counties to, first off, better articulate, more clearly articulate what some of the issues are and agree on how we're going to address them. I think that that's a fair and a very reasonable expectation that the counties have.
Representative Bradley? Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, last week, I just remain concerned, not because I'm so concerned about the counties as I am about the people that they will be trying to serve. And, you know, last year, and of course I support everything Representative Medora and others are working on for covering everybody and covering it more cheaply with less administrative costs, which of course we haven't achieved with this mental health initiative. We still have the multiple health plans with all their highly paid administrators. And so, you know, when we skim that off and then we try to have the counties be the bottom line for the uninsured, and what are they supposed to apply for competitive grants that Representative Tremba's counties may not get? You know, that's the whole package that concerns me. So I, you know, that's always been my bottom line. But I was comforted last year that, you know, we will not have rubber stamp people in this room working with DHS and the health plans, and that we should always rely on the RFPs, and that would be where we'll get the detail. The devil's in the detail, but they'll be worked out. But we just heard today that they are not finalized, but yet a year from now, this is going forward. So I hope you will, you know, work very carefully with the counties who are the bottom line, and we want to make sure everybody has a bottom line who has a mental illness. And are you planning to convene the courts and the counties? You know, they just recommended that you do that. And it seems to me that's you know, really a concerning, you know, how does this tie in with all those court issues that, that counties always end up being the bottom line for? And are the health plans going to be at all responsible for those people that get into the courts? That's, I think that's a major thing that came to my mind today after listening. So are you planning to soon convene that and work on those issues with the courts and the counties and DHS?
Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling. Regarding the court issue, first want to remind committee members that we do have a good base of state law regarding court-ordered mental health care and the responsibility of both public and private insurers in the state to cover court-ordered treatment services. Also, in response to, we got a letter last week with where the counties outlined some of the concerns that they presented today. Following that, we did go to the mental health ombudsman, who has been working on a project where they've been training and working with courts on commitment-related issues, and showed them some of the concerns that were brought to us by the counties, and the and those staff there in the ombudsman office offered to help us with that and help us make that connection with the court. At least we've got our foot in the door to start for that. But as I said, we got a hold of some of that most recently, and that's what we've done with it so far. So I'm optimistic that we can make that work as a way to start with that.
Mr. Allen, Representative Allen,
I'm just going to say thank you, and I hope that this committee will be kept apprised of that, and there'll be something to report back this session.
Mr. Allen, just a brief follow-up to that. I'm interested in knowing, because DHS, the counties have been involved, the mental health community, it doesn't seem like individuals from the courts have really been involved thus far or been looked at to be advisors. And I'm also interested in individuals who are out-of-home placement specialists. You know, what are you getting from those individuals? Are you just who you have at the table that works for me, whether the department or in the community, that specializes in out-of-home placement and not just mental health?
Madam Chair, we did, in our children's issues group, have a lot of folks from the counties who have broad responsibility for out-of-home placement. I also went to Erin Sullivan Sutton and got her Title IV-E and her out-of-home placement experts, and they helped us work through some of the foster care law, how it would relate to children who were placed through a health plan. Even sought the expertise of Chris Johnson, who's managing the tribal child welfare projects, and we got into some of those issues. So I do have good access to some of those resources in this process, and I can help connect you with them if you have more specific questions.
Mr. Allen and members, I'm going to just do a quick statement and then let Representative Madore, and then I think we'll adjourn and invite you back next week, because actually I do have a list of questions, and several of them have to do with out-of-home placement. And while you've been seeking help from these individuals, I think there's still a lot of unanswered questions and concerns that individuals, especially family members that are impacted with out-of-home placement, are going to have, because those questions have not been addressed, and wanting to know what you're going to be doing through the working process in the next year. And members, just to let you know, we will, whether it is before session gets out, reconvene around this particular issue, or come back after session, we will get another update before 2009. I don't think it would be fair to anyone that's involved and concerned about this issue to wait until it's rolled out in 2009 to get that final update on what's going to be implemented. Representative Madore.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And two things. We've been invited also to attend a gathering at the Guild, who's worked very closely with Ramsey County, and I would like to suggest that we take a little field trip if we get some time to go and do that. And so that's on that. So thank you for summarizing, and I'd like to offer and maybe even act as a conduit to have that happen. But I have not had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Allen, so I guess I will also advise him next week to come with your book. And we have a great many questions, and my questions will be focusing specifically on the basic special needs basic care plan, in particular the screening documents that are going to be used to develop the mental health programs for these folks, the behavioral plans, the strategy for
finding assistance in some of these counties where we don't have enough workers. I'm also very interested in the case management plan for it has to deal with mental health, so perhaps even Ms. Parker might be somebody for you to come in and bring as an advocate for that. And also the issues regarding formulary changes and allowing the plans to change formularies in the middle of the year, requiring then that somebody have to disenroll and re-enroll in the fee-for-service again, how you're planning on dealing with all of that. So I also, too, have a great many questions, and I won't burden the committee now at this late hour, but I would like to suggest that we have the time to go through that next week and see where we end up.
Thank you, Representative Madore. So just to clarify, members, there will be still Representative Ward's bill and a lot of discussion around the psych bed, but we will take this up as soon as we get through the psych bed issue. Thank you, members. Meeting is adjourned.